From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. Later in the hour, the future of feminist journalism. We speak with the new executive editor of Ms. Magazine. But first, the links between Adams Morgan and Addis Ababa. Ethiopia is one of America's key allies in Africa, but its government has been criticized for suppressing opposition parties. After controversial elections in 2005, elected opposition leaders were arrested and imprisoned for 2 years. It's a story of international interest, but it's also an intensely local story, watched closely by the Ethiopian community in our region, many of whom are fiercely critical of the government in Addis Ababa. Next month, elections will be held to fill seats won but never occupied by the opposition in 2005. We are joined now by telephone from Terrence Lyons, who is a professor at the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution at George Mason University and a senior advisor to the Carter Center Ethiopian Election Observation Project. Terrence Lyons, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
Terrence joins us from Bloomington. Oh, he joins us from Washington, D.C. Sorry about that, Terrence. As we said, Ethiopia is one of our closest allies in the Horn of Africa. But this is also, in many ways, an intensely local story because of the influence of the Ethiopian diaspora, a large segment of which lives in this area. Can you tell us a little bit about that influence and how it's exercised?
Yes, the Ethiopian diaspora does play an important role in politics in Ethiopia. It's not just the Ethiopian diaspora. We could say similar things about other diasporas historically, whether it's the Irish or today in terms of the Armenian diaspora. But the Ethiopian diaspora is particularly influential and is actually quite a diverse diaspora. The most vocal, most highly organized segments are generally anti-government, but there are also plenty of Ethiopians in the diaspora who are support the government or support movements, the Oromo movements, for example, that are not part of the opposition that participated in the 2005 elections.
When we talk about the kind of influence that this diaspora has in Ethiopia itself, as evidenced, say, by the election in 2005, how would you characterize it?
I'd characterize it in three ways, perhaps. One is that, without a doubt, there is money is being raised in North America and elsewhere in the diaspora that in 2005 was being used to fund political party activities. But it goes beyond that. Given the nature of the Ethiopian state and the limits on political speech there, the difficulties of organizing a political party or setting an agenda or deciding who's the leader, those types of decisions get pushed overseas with the Ethiopian diaspora play an important role in creating a political movement. And so there's money, there's ideas, there's also media. The Ethiopian opposition in the diaspora controls or runs a lot of internet sites, news sites, blogs, listservs, and so on. And in the absence of a free press back in Ethiopia, these become the sources of information where political ideas are put forth.
Terrence, this is a story that has been very difficult for us to produce in a live format, especially because there are a whole lot of players in the diaspora who have very specific agendas. And because we've become sensitive to the deep divisions among formerly allied opposition leaders, when we were approached to have Haile Shewell, who is chairman of the Coalition for Unity and Democracy, one of the major opposition groups, as a guest, we immediately realized that it would cause an uproar if he was the only opposition leader to appear. So then we booked Bernahu Nega, the former mayor-elect of Addis Ababa, who also refused to take his seat. We decided to have him join us in a different segment, by telephone. Mr. Haile Shewell nevertheless pulled out, saying he didn't wish to appear on the same program with Bernahu Nega, which obviously raises the question, why would someone objecting to a lack of democracy in Ethiopia refuse to participate in a broadcast in which a political opponent would be heard? Hopefully during the course of this broadcast we'll get an answer to that question, because we will later in the broadcast be talking with Bernahu Nega. But first, you, Terrence Lyons, set the stage for us. In 2005, The opposition had a very good result in that election, winning about 30% of legislative seats, including all of the seats representing the capital city of Addis Ababa. But protests broke out the next month, and as a result, next month there's going to be elections for many of those seats. Why did the opposition not take the seats that they won in 2005?
Many in the opposition are completely sincere and convinced in thinking that the election was they lost through fraudulent means. In other words, that the opposition actually won those elections, and to take up 30% of the seats when you deserved the majority was anti-democratic, was to betray the cause that they were fighting for. But beyond that, there is one other point on that. The decision of whether or not to take up those seats or not was actually fiercely debated over the summer of 2005, both in the diaspora and back in Ethiopia. So there were leaders of the opposition who were arguing that participating and sort of working incrementally towards your goals was the best way to go. But there were others who said, no, we can't compromise our ideals by participating in a parliament that will in fact have no power, and we won't be able to gain power, influence through that mechanism. So it depends on how you view the 2005 election, but then there's also a more fundamental question of how do you design your strategies politically? Do you accept that you have to be all or nothing, you win or you lose, or can you develop a political strategy of, I'm going to go step by step, I'm going to take half a loaf, I'm going to get what I can get now and then compete again to get more the next time? And the opposition was divided on that strategic question.
But before the elections in 2005, the opposition had all of 12 seats in the legislature. After that election, the leading winning party, the government's party, had 367, but the opposition increased significantly to 172 seats. So I guess the choice was whether or not to boycott or boycott and see what life would be like as a parliamentary opposition, so to speak, or to boycott. And joining us now by telephone, we talked about him before, is Bernahu Nega, who is an international scholar in residence at Bucknell University. He was the mayor-elect in Addis Ababa in that election in 2005. He was imprisoned after that election. He joins us now by telephone. Bernahu Nega, thank you very much for joining us. Bernahu Nega, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kojo. Thank you for having me.
You were elected mayor of Addis Ababa in 2005. Why did you choose not to take that position?
Well, it's not a question of choosing. By the way, when it comes to Addis Ababa, meaning the opposition, myself and the elected councilmen, were ready to take Addis Ababa. We went actually to take over, but the government refused. So it's not like we didn't want to take the city. The argument actually within the CUD and what the CUD presented at that time, and I need to correct Terence on this, was not whether we need to sit in parliament or not. The question that we posed, the 8-point questions that we posed, was, look, it was clear that the government has stolen the election. The international observers have said so. We know it. The Ethiopian community knows it. The next question is, okay, we will allow you to take power, even if you have stolen the election. But let's make sure that the future elections will not be stolen. Let's make sure that the institutions necessary for a democratic political order will be there by the next election. So let's negotiate on these 8 points. And these points were making sure, for example, that there is an independent media, making sure, for example, that parliament was really a functioning parliament, that the judiciary is an independent institution that would freely adjudicate on conflicting issues, making sure that the police and the military are independent of the party, which at this point is just simply a one-party military rule. So we were saying, although you have stolen the election, we are willing to sit in parliament and work for this a real functioning democracy if you are willing to negotiate. And that's what the government refused. The government simply refused to negotiate on any issue. The government, even after stealing the election, simply said, you know, you take what we give you or else. And, you know, for a party that's committed to a democratic political order, to accept that would be tantamount to accept the defeat of democracy. That's why we didn't take our seats in parliament. But for Addis Ababa, we said, you know, we are willing to take it. We went, and the election board people who were sitting there said, well, the government has refused to give us the city unless otherwise the party decides to sit in parliament. So it is not the party's decision not to take the seat. It was the government's refusal to hand over a city that it was thoroughly defeated.
Why would you not run again next month when you won it back in 2005 and see if you could win it again and actually occupy the mayoral chair?
Well, Kojo, for anyone who is following the Ethiopian scene now, even that little room that was opened in 2005 is now completely closed. The Ethiopian government has decided that it was a mistake that it allowed that election, and that it is not gonna allow this kind of a real competitive election again. We have now in Ethiopia a completely totalitarian state. I mean, this election is a sham election. There is no opposition. It was not even willing to give the party name to the CUD. It was, it took the party symbol and gave it to, another group that it feels is its supporter. We don't even have a registered party anymore. I mean, what you have in Ethiopia now is not any movement towards democracy. It is a complete, totalitarian state that does not allow and will not allow, unless otherwise forced, will not allow a real free election to take place in that country. So what is the meaning of participating, if at all you participate in such kind of an election?
Bernahu Nega is international scholar in residence at Bucknell University. He was mayor-elect in Addis Ababa. He was imprisoned after the election in 2005. He joins us by telephone from New York. Terrence Lyons is a professor at the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution at George Mason University and a senior advisor in the Carter Center Ethiopian Election Observation Project. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 800-433-8850, 800-433-8850, or you can send us email to kojo@wamu.org. Terrence Lyons, there's a long tradition of boycotting elections and opting not to participate within the diaspora and among opposition groups in Ethiopia. Some people said what was very noteworthy about 2005 was the fact that everyone participated. Why?
I agree that 2005 was noteworthy or an anomaly in that way compared to earlier elections. I do want to note, however, that not everybody participated. One group, that's a military group, a group that's engaged in an armed struggle, that did not participate was the Oromo Liberation Front, and there's a whole set of issues around that. But the CUD party and another coalition party, both with shaped in part, not totally, but in part by the diaspora, did choose to participate. And it made for an incredible election in 2005, in May 2005. I was able to go to the opposition rally, or to observe the opposition rally in Mescal Square in central Addis Ababa just before, week before the election. And it was incredible. It was so dynamic, and it really represented what the possibilities were for democracy in Ethiopia in 2005. And I agree with Dr. Berhanu that moment is now gone. That political space has now been...
Even though it's now gone, one cannot help speculating about what would have happened had those 172 opposition seats been all occupied in the legislature with the increased strength of the opposition. Humor me for a second. Speculate for a second. Do you think we would have been able to see an interesting experiment in democracy, given the fact that the government knew that it was in a significantly weakened position and the opposition knew that it was in a significantly strengthened position, even though it did not win the election?
Kojo, can I...
Please do, Dr. Berhanu.
Yes, look, there is no need for speculation on that. You must understand that...
That's why I said human.
Over 90% of those elected in parliament, the opposition people who were elected in parliament, actually joined. It was only the leaders that were imprisoned. We have the experience over the last 2.5 years of what that parliament was. There, those people who have joined parliament have, essentially thrown the towel, that this is a meaningless parliament. It has It has no no effect whatsoever. Not, you know, you must understand, just immediately after the election, the Egyptian government, parliament, changed the rules of the game. Before that election, you need only 20 parliamentarians to set an agenda, to put an agenda for discussion. Immediately after the government found out that it is going to lose a lot more seats, it changed the rules in parliament, whereby a parliament, you need about 50%, over 50% of parliamentarians to put an agenda in parliament, to have a discussion on any issue. Two, they put an another item which says parliament has no right to pass a law that has anything to do with finance. You know, can you imagine the U.S. Congress not being able to have any influence on the purse? You know, that is a rule that the government changed after it found out that, you know, more than 20 people are going to be voted in. So here is a government that immediately after that election decided that it was a mistake. In the first place, they tried this experiment in order to, you know, to give the semblance of democracy to fool, if you like, the foreigners that are giving them money. And as soon as they found out that this is an experiment that could seriously threaten their power, they just closed everything.
Dr. Bernahu, we're going to have to take a short break. We're going to return to this conversation about the complex politics of Ethiopia and your phone calls at 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Nandi.
You're listening to the Kojo Nandi Show on WAMU 88.5. Good afternoon. I'm Janine Herbst. 50 degrees in northwest Washington. We're going up to a high today in the upper 50s.
Next time on Tell Me More, slavery should be a distant if painful memory. But for too many in the West African nation of Mauritania, it is still part of everyday life. Now a new government is trying to move its citizens to change.
You cannot build a new nation, a new identity, if one layer of the population is set aside.
I'm Michelle Martin. How one country is trying to heal the wounds of the past. Next time on Tell Me More.
Today at 2 on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 is provided by the Sanju K. Bansal Foundation, dedicated to helping people help themselves through improved access to information. From the American Evolution, a history through art at the Corcoran Gallery of Art, celebrating almost 200 objects from its American collection. Exhibition information at corcoran.org.
Coming up at 3 on Fresh Air, it's the second part in our look at the HBO series The Wire. We'll talk with the creator of the series, David Simon. He'll describe the people he based some of the characters on, plus he'll tell us about the newspaper reporting he did years ago that inspired some of the storylines. That's on Fresh Air, coming up at 3 on WAMU 88.5. Mostly sunny today, a high in the upper 50s, becoming mostly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 30s. Cloudy tomorrow, slight chance of rain and a high around 50.
Welcome back. We're talking about the sometimes complex situation in Ethiopia with Terrence Lyons, who's a professor at the Institute for Conflict Analysis and Resolution at George Mason University and a senior advisor to the Carter Center Ethiopia Election Observation Project, and Birhanu Nega, who is an international scholar in residence at Bucknell University. He was the mayor-elect in Addis Ababa, who was imprisoned after the election in 2005. Allow me to go to James in Washington, D.C. James, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My question for the mayor-elect is, I don't understand the situation. If you had an opportunity to serve and you were elected, but you chose not to take office, then how can you complain after the fact about the actual fairness of the elections? Isn't that trying to have it both ways? And isn't that like the boy who kills his parents and then wants mercy for being an orphan?
Dr. Bernet, who I think explained earlier that he was prepared to take his seat as mayor and he was not permitted. Is that correct, Dr. Bernet?
That is absolutely right. The government refused to hand in power in the city. You know, it has nothing to do with us. The government... You know, you must understand this government. I mean, this is not a government that that even for fun would play the democratic game, unless otherwise it knows it has absolute control over it.
Well, in that situation, Dr. Berhanu, what do you think of the prospects for democracy and opposition politics in Ethiopia are?
Well, that is really the issue that Ethiopians are discussing both at home and abroad, given the government's absolute unwillingness to entertain the possibility of democratic politics in the country. What are the options? Well, you know, as Terence earlier suggested, you know, there are groups, opposition groups from before, who have said this government is not a government that is in any way willing to democratize society, willing to respect basic rights of its citizens. Therefore, the only way to change it is to fight. And they have been fighting. When we decided to join the election, one of the reasons that we forwarded was precisely that. Unless otherwise, we, in one form or another, take the election seriously and try to democratize the society, then this country is going to go into an endless conflict. We were trying to avoid that kind of conflict. The government is now making it almost impossible for anyone who wants to change the system by operating within the system, impossible. Therefore, maybe Ethiopian politics is moving in that direction, unfortunately.
Dr. Berhanu, thank you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Berhanu Nega is international scholar in residence at Bucknell University. He was mayor-elect in Addis Ababa. He was imprisoned after the election in 2005. You just heard him say he was not allowed to take his position as mayor. He joined us by telephone from New York. Terence Lyons, you say that Ethiopia is actually confronting a host of crises, crisis with Eritrea, crisis in Somalia, in unstable corners of Ethiopia, and in its domestic politics, and that all of these smaller crises can conceivably contribute to a major crisis.
That's right. I mean, the regime in Ethiopia has proven itself to be very resilient and able to overcome crises. But domestically, it still, I think, has some real challenges, both in the Oromo region, which is the most populous region of the country, within the urban areas where Berhanu's party, for example, swept all seats in Addis Ababa. But it also has problems. The Ethiopia-Eritrea peace agreement, for example, is really coming off the rails. The UN mission there is being forced to withdraw, and Ethiopia has not found a mechanism to demarcate the border on the ground. The Ethiopia seems to not be able to find a way out of Mogadishu to help the transitional federal government there build a stable, broad alliance. And then in the Ogaden, in the Somali-inhabited eastern part of Ethiopia, there's a horrific humanitarian crisis going on these three or four crises are all coming together here in 2008, these crises may well test the resilience of this regime.
Joining us now by telephone is Taye Woldesamit, who is a professor of political science at Illinois Wesleyan University and international coordinator for the Coalition for Unity and Democracy. He joins us by telephone from Bloomington, Illinois. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We began this broadcast by saying that the chairman of the Coalition for Unity and Democracy had agreed to appear on this broadcast until he found out that Berhanu Nega would also be appearing, even though in a separate segment of the broadcast he refused to appear. For the average listener to this broadcast, that would be confusing. Can you explain why?
I think it's not confusing. I think the president, Tohailu Shaul, stated that he was invited to be on this show to state that the problem in Ethiopia and how the opposition is facing this dictatorial regime